And I think when you allow the court to develop its jurisprudence, it usually happens over a long period of time, because you might have a situation where the matter is goes to the High Court, from the High Court go to the full bench, Supreme Court of Appeal, then to the Constitutional Court. That is part of how jurisprudence is developed. So it will be difficult for us to set time frames. When, if it was something that was in the purview of the executive, we could set time frames. But once you say the court must develop jurisprudence, it can be forever. It can take a very long time, because firstly, there has to be a legal problem before the court, for the court to decide and to, and for that decision to be part of reportable cases. And it can, depending on the parties before the court, and if the matter is escalated up to the highest court in the land, that is how we generally develop our jurisprudence. Maybe you might want to comment, Mr. Robertson.
Before that, Chair, is there any other way except the court? Thank you, Chair.
The only other way is for us to have a formulation in the legislation, which we are struggling with now.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot take it.
It's something we must be thinking about it when we come back to go through the document the second time. If you wanted to, if we want a solution now, then we will have to think about that solution, and that solution needs to be in the legislation. And if we want it to develop organically as part of our jurisprudence of our court, then we will have to wait for some time for it to develop. Mr. Robertson?
Chairperson, before Mr. Robertson?
Honorable Mfuken?
Maybe it's correct that we wait. I really want to withdraw when we're saying we give it to the court. Looking at the processes, we might be failing victims. And I think we have to revisit this and see what are other options that we can come up with. We should not rush it for now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mr. Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I must just point out, the electronic service is a second option that is given to a court. A court must ensure that the protection order is served. So if it cannot be physically served on the respondent, the court must tell the clerk of the court how it must further be served. If one method of service doesn't work, the court can go to a second option, a third option, even a fourth or fifth option. So the court's discretion is not restricted. So I don't think it's really necessary at this stage probably to develop something that is very innovative. Some countries do accept it in limited circumstances, but I do not think in South Africa law that service of a warrant, per se, on somebody else has been accepted as a valid means of service unless the court direct otherwise. There's instances where courts currently did allow electronic service of documents. But then it's regulated by the court's order, and the court must tell you what is sufficient service. Thank you.
But I think the issue was much broader than that, Mr. Roberts. The issue was in an instance where you use electronic delivery, for instance, Facebook, as you have indicated, and the person comes back and says, "I never read my Facebook page in the last 6 months, or I did not open my emails." I think the issue was around that, and you are indicating that there are in other jurisprudence, there are certain ways in which they do deal with these issues. Is it possible that you can favor us with such innovative ways from other jurisprudence so that we can look at those issues also?
Mr. Chairperson, I will do it. I must point out that, let's say, in other jurisdictions, it's mainly also relating to courts that make certain orders to the effect that documents must be served in a specific way. But I will provide all the jurisprudence available from mainly New Zealand, Australia, UK, America, and probably some of the European countries in this regard as well. I will do that. I think we kind of finished with the bill itself. I must point to another document that was submitted last night. It is a domestic violence safety monitoring notice option that I came up with as a proposal of new clauses that can be inserted in the bill. I think the committee did ask us for innovative solutions to cater for protection of victims. I did submit it to Saya and Vunani. I don't know if they want to put it up, but the proposal is to the effect that mainly where a complainant and a respondent share the same residence, and there's always a problem from the first time that the police visit the scene where Section 3 can be applied, namely where the police can either arrest or not arrest the respondent, right through to the stage, or even before the stage, that complainant applies for a domestic violence order. The complainant is basically unprotected during that stage unless the court issue an interim protection order. If the court does not issue an interim protection order, the documents must be served on the respondent. They must appear on a return date, or where there is an interim protection order, the parties must appear on a return date. Many instances of domestic violence in any case, as was also pointed out, actually occur once it comes to the respondent's attention that the complainant applies for the protection order. So the proposal is to the effect that the safety of a complainant may be monitored amongst others from the stage that there's an incident of domestic violence right through to the time that the final protection order is issued and even after that. The clause makes provision for a monitoring notice and two circumstances, namely, first, one that's issued by a court, and second, notice that is issued by a peace officer. Vunani, can you just go down? In terms of the proposed 3B2, a complainant may, at any stage when she institute proceedings for a protection order in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, apply for a domestic violence safety monitoring notice, and also where the court issues a final protection order, a complainant may also apply for such an order. The basis on which a court may grant it is, firstly, there must be reasonable grounds for believing that the complainant and respondent occupies a joint residence, and secondly, that a complainant on reasonable grounds fears for his or her safety. Domestic violence monitoring notice issued in terms of subsection 2 must be served on the station commander of police station as well as the respondent. And as is pointed out in paragraph B, the station commander must cause police to contact the complainant at regular intervals. Also may visit the complainant's residence at regular intervals. And it also gives the police certain powers. If you can go down more, powers where there's resistance or where the person prevents the police official to see the complainant to actually enter the joint residence and even to kick down doors, to communicate in private with the complainant, and obviously to observe her. That is the crux of the court notice. Provision is made for service of the document on the respondent, and the notice is of a limited time period. It expires at a certain time determined by the court. Further, insofar as it relates to peace officers, subsection 3 makes provision that a peace officer may, in certain circumstances where they attend the incident of domestic violence, as contemplated in section 3, 1 and 2 of the proposed amendment to section 3 of the bill, that they must request the complainant whether she wants to apply for a monitoring notice. If the complainant and respondent shares the same residence, they may issue a monitoring notice. And on the grounds that they reasonably believe that complainant fears for his or her safety. Joint residence is quite important here. If you look at the Criminal Procedure Act, amongst others, Section 2 of the Criminal Procedure Act allows the police to enter a residence if the occupant of a resident of the residency or other person in control of the residency gives his or her consent to such entrance. The notice works on the same basis, namely, since the complainant and respondent reside in the same residence, the complainant may obviously give permission that she may be monitored and that certain persons may access the residence to see if she is all right. So, in terms of this notice, the peace officer may then also access the residency and monitor the safety of a complainant. The notice that is issued by a peace officer is of a limited and interim nature. It expires 12 o'clock on the next court day, and a peace officer can only issue a notice after court hours. Further, in terms of this clause, certain interference with the functions and powers of a peace officer, a police officer, is criminalized. It's also criminalized to prevent a complainant to show him or herself to a peace officer, a police officer, or it's also a criminal offense if other person doesn't want to allow the complainant to communicate in private with a peace officer or police officer. This is the basic draft. It can be extended, amongst others, also to certain circumstances where there's no joint residence, where the complainant and respondent live separately, then obviously if the complainant gives permission for such monitoring, the police can at least access her house or her place of residence and check on her if she is all right. And then I further propose that a certain new provision be included in Section 3 to make or to provide that at the incident of domestic violence contemplated in Section 3, 1, where a respondent is not arrested, that it must be obligation for the police to inquire about such monitoring notice and to give respondent an application form to complete. That's right at the bottom of this page. Firstly, this proposal was not consulted upon with the South African police or other functionaries that may be involved. Secondly, it may have personnel implications and financial implications for the police and also for peace officers. So my question is, must I take this forward, consult on this, or include it in the bill? So I leave it in the hands of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Jella, is that your hand or an old hand?
Thank you, Chairperson. When I was going through this document yesterday, something that I noted, Chairperson. Let me just say, firstly, why apply for this monitoring when already there is an indication that there is danger? Is it not possible that we are just saying it once a complainant put a complaint qualifies for this? That's my view. My question is that why apply again for monitoring? Or maybe Mr. Robinson can say, okay, it is her choice. It depends with the degree of danger. But maybe he can explain that one. But this one, Chair, when I was reading it, something I picked up is that there will be a point where a peace officer or a police will go in, during the monitoring, where he or she will talk to the complainant secretly, without even the victim, the respondent knowing. So my fear was that, is that if that can happen, is it not going to cause more problems for the complainant, especially when you are doing it secretly in a manner that it can also bring suspicion to the respondent that if it's a male, the complainant is a female, that, oh, you are now talking secretly with these men, you know, jealousy, because some of these acts that are happening during domestic violence, it is because of jealousy. So that secret part of it, I'm saying sometimes, I'm not saying always, sometimes it's because of jealousy, the husband is jealous, does not want, you know, small things that happen in the families. So I'm saying, is it not going to cause problems? Those are two questions that I would love to have get clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mfuthu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm partly covered by Honorable Maseko on the issue of why getting an order for monitoring after, you know, you got a protection order. The second thing is that once you go for and look for a protection order, it means you are not safe. Why should it be even something like that comes to this place? And the other thing is that, Chair, the issue of getting that monitoring, whatever order. And then they are saying maybe the police officers will be the ones that goes and check that you are safe and all that. I mean, if we have a problem of when police are called, when there's an incident of domestic violence, and they will say that they don't have a van or a car to go there, how sure are we going to, are we sure that this is going to be something that is going to be a success? And the last part is that last year, Chair, a police officer was killed going on a call of domestic violence, arriving at that home, and that person was shot. So where are we? Because I don't really feel that it's a, this domestic violence safety monitoring plan, it's really in order with what we've experienced before. We need to look at this and apply our minds in a better way. But here we are failing victims if we can look at how it is at the moment, this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are no other hands, Mr. Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Firstly, if you obtain an interim protection order amongst others, if you then, after on receipt of that interim notice by the respondent, if you locked up or severely beaten or even killed, there's nobody to actually monitor what's going to happen afterwards with you. It must be stressed, I just indicate that this notice is served on the respondent. The respondent is made aware of the fact that the police is going to monitor the safety of the complainant. Right through, what's his name, for the period to be specified in the order, or rather the notice. Otherwise, if we just rely on the Domestic Violence Act currently, even if there's an interim protection order or a final protection order, in certain exigent circumstances, there is nothing available to a complainant who really fears for her or his safety to ensure that there's at least somebody that's going to monitor his safety. That's a problematic aspect in the Domestic Violence Act. Like I said, it's innovative. It's a new measure to at least provide some measure of protection to complainants who have not yet applied for a domestic violence interdict pursuant to conduct that is referred to in Section 3, 1 and 2. And even in instances where this is actually served at the joint residence to ensure that somebody monitors whether the complainant is still alright or not. Like I said, it's innovative, it's not in other countries' legislation, it's something new. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mfuka and Honorable Jana. We follow.
Sir, I just want to check on where are we going to, I'm listening very carefully to Mr. Roberts, and I'm thinking about cases and what happened before. Why can't we have a clause that says, if it's a first-time complainant, and then also this culprit, maybe the first time somebody complains about it, it should be noted in that way. At the moment, I know of women that are having 5 protection orders. 5. Because there's nowhere in the system where you apply and then you find that after some time people make up and then you come back again. They are not telling you that, by the way, you once applied for this, and they don't have anywhere where they can say to this whoever abuser to say, but you have you are a serial abuser. This is what we can see. Can I really understand that? Because Yeah, it's more about monitoring that failed us even before. It's when we don't know what we are doing. We can come up with the best now, but if we are not going to be doing a proper monitoring on what we do now and know that the Kimofukeng has opened up a case of a domestic violence, how many times, with who, for who, one person or with many, and all those things, because we really need to be looking at it. And that will be able to clarify where we are going with the domestic, with the monitoring notice and all those things. That is my suggestion, Chair. I know we are not at the end, but I'm thinking aloud about it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jella.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Mr. Robinson should not feel bad. It's a good idea that he came up with. As he says, it's innovative. That is exactly what we encourage to our officials, that we need people that think exactly outside the box, Chairperson. So my view is that we appreciate what he has done. And he gave us something to talk about. So what we need to do is just to polish this and agree that how are we going to make sure that we have that, like Honorable Mofokeng indicating that, you know, there have been, some people are sitting with more than even 5 court orders. I mean to say, yes. So what I'm saying is that let's polish what he has presented to us. But it has to be there. There must be a clause in terms of monitoring. We want monitoring to happen. And Chair, it shouldn't be the issue of, I'm not sure if I agree with the issue of saying we should indicate if it's a first time or a second time. You know, sometimes women, they keep quiet in these houses. And the day he goes to the police, you'd sometimes find out that this has been happening. It was now enough for her. And then she felt like, no, this is it. I'm going to the police this time. So immediately when the woman goes to the police and report this matter, it should be taken very serious. Very serious. Because I'm talking from experience. We grew up in the families where such things are happening. So you find that the woman keeps quiet for a long time. And then when he goes to the police and say, now I'm going to request for help, the very same people that you are expecting them to assist you immediately, they do other things. They don't treat the matter as agent, as the owner, the complainant is taking it. So I'm saying it's a good thing. Let's have that monitoring. Let's see how do we put it so that it doesn't disappear. Thank you, Chair.
Sir, can I clarify myself on something?
Proceed.
I was not saying, Honorable Matseko, that the first-time reporter. I was saying for a first time, a person who actually comes to reporting, not a person who comes for the first time to the court. You find that this person has been there reporting, but those that are coming for the first time, I don't have a problem with them. I have a problem with the serial reporters that are not monitored to be taken care of. That's what I was saying.
Thank you very much. I think since this is an innovative idea that has been presented before us, I would ask that parties take some time to think about it. We must do two things. Part of it, we must look at issues that are part of legislative drafting that need to be incorporated into the law as part of our legislative drafting. And secondly, look at issues that need enforcement that would be part of our continuous monitoring of the department to check to what an extent is the department implementing and ensuring that there is continuous improvement in the quality of service that they provide to the victims of domestic violence? And to what an extent should they be continuously reporting to Parliament on the implementation of that monitoring and evaluation and model that would be agreed upon if it has to be agreed upon. So we need to have two processes from this. One is to what should be in the bill as part of the legislative drafting. And secondly, what should be part of our own oversight monitoring as Parliament over the department as part of their continuous improvement methodology. So we are not yet there. I think we are going to come back to it. I think let's sleep over it. And I think Mr. Roberts and your team, if you can work, you can help us to deal with the two issues. And as a legislative drafter, what should be in the bill and how should it be crafted to be part of the bill? And what mischief do we seek to deal with and how we should deal with it? And I think when we come back to deal with the bill, if those issues would have already been addressed, I think it would take us forward. Taking into consideration the issue that the members have already raised, that best endeavors do not really deal with the problem. We want solutions. We want a situation where whatever we put in place, it is workable, it's working, and we are able to enforce it, because lofty ideas would not really help the problem unless they are implemented. So if we can, I think Honorable Jela is correct to say we have to continuously embrace innovation and we ensure that that innovation is part of our legislative processes, and also it is part of our oversight a process as to how we oversight the departments that report to us. Members, I think we are still going to go back to the bill as a whole, clause by clause still. The bill is going to be cleaned up, taking into consideration all that we have raised today, including this issue that we have just raised now. The bill is going to come back to us and we satisfy ourselves that it does indeed reflect the issues we have raised, and it is up to the level and the standard we want it to be. Given all of that, members, I was looking at the program. It's quite tight. I think we agreed on tomorrow because we thought that we would not be able to do everything today, but we have been able to do everything. Just to look at the first draft, the working draft for today. I would suggest to members that is one of the most, in fact, I think it is the most involved bill if you compare it with the sexual offenses and the criminal law and related matters, that we don't meet tomorrow. We allow Mr. Roberts and the team to go and rework. And Ms. Mungato, we allow Mr. Roberts and the team to go and rework the document. And we meet on Friday. When we meet on Friday, we will be meeting to deal with the criminal law, sexual offenses. So Mr. Roberts will have tomorrow and Friday and the weekend. And we will find time when we deal with the interviews, maybe in the evening, Tuesday and Wednesday. I think let's reserve Tuesday and Wednesday to deal with this domestic violence again. And so that from the 12th, we can be able to do an evaluation as to how far have we gone and whether it would be practical for us to be able to pass all the three bills this term, but we are still working towards that. I think by Tuesday and Wednesday, if we are able to go through all the clauses, then we'll be able to do a proper evaluation as to how far we would have gone. And because as much as we are trying to chase the deadline, but it cannot be at the expense of Parliament passing a quality bill that is implementable. And so I would suggest that we meet with Mr. Roberts and his team on Tuesday after the interviews, Tuesday and Wednesdays after the interviews. I'm not sure what is the feeling of honorable members?
We agree, Chairperson.
I'm done, Chair.
Supported.
Thank you very much. Yes, honorable Ngoda, we are done for today. Thank you very much, Mr. Roberts, and the team for the hard work. It's a very involved bill, and it will take us better part of next week just working on it. Members, you would know that we also have interviews that might be very long, because we would be doing something extraordinary in the sense that we would be having two sets of interviews per individual, and we have two sets of people that we might be interviewing, two sets of participants that we might be interviewing. So the interviews themselves might be long, and we would also apply that we don't go to sittings next week, but we will reserve the evenings and late evenings just to go through the bills to ensure that they are in line with what is expected of Parliament on our side. I would also ask that the committee secretary to circulate the legal opinion that we received on the traditional courts bill so that members can start going through that legal opinion. And I'm informed that Cabinet has also approved the bill on land courts, which I'm not sure whether we have already received it as Parliament. And if we have, it will be important that we schedule a briefing. But it can't be this term. It will be when we come back. It cannot be this term, but these are the things that I thought that I must generally update members on. Members, it's now 2:10. Can we meet on Friday after the sitting of the subcommittee? Can we meet at Mr. Honorable Chance, what time do you finish? Can we meet at 1 for the meeting to meet with Mr. Dupuis and his team on the sexual offences, criminal law sexual offences?
Honorable
Ngola?
No, Chair, I don't think 1 is a problem, but I just want to brief you that the documents that we have received for the Friday meeting are too huge and there are too many. So that my view that the thing may take long, almost half of the day or 70%. But with the subcommittee has not finished at 1, we'll be able to be flexible with time.
Okay, maybe let's start at 2 as originally planned. Well, I do think that the issue you are raising is valid. I saw the documents are quite many. And at the same time, I do also think that we have moved quite a bit with criminal law sexual offenses, I do think that we might finish it on Friday. So if let's say we start at 2, maybe by 6 would be done.
Yes, I think that's fine.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Honorable members, thank you very much, and thank you to the team for your assistance and your hard work. Let's meet next week. I just want to give you time to do all the changes that were proposed by members to the document. So on Friday, we will meet with Mr. Dupriz at 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.